Hello, this is Irene Bullard. I'll be reading the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Tuesday, April 24th, 2018. Let's begin on the front page. There's a large photograph of a young man sitting inside a greenhouse on the ISU campus. His name is Brandon Clem. He is a junior and he's studying agronomy. And he is surrounded by beautiful seedlings, green, pink, orange. The article is Horticultural Ninjas Help ISU Campus Bloom. No better feeling than tending 14K plants, staffer says. On one of those recent overcast, cool, blustery days that have been all too common around here, an oasis of sorts could be found inside the Illinois State University's Grounds Department greenhouses off Gregory Street. Inside, it was warm and a bit humid with the earthy smell of spring as thousands of small plants destined for summer display were tended by ISU horticulturalist Heather Vozella and three student workers. Everything on campus is done and in for spring, said Vozella. We make sure everything looks nice for commencement. To give you an idea of the monumental size of their task, Vozella notes there are 14,000 plants in three greenhouses. They start as small seedlings in trays. The goal is to build their root systems before they are transplanted around campus. So one of the workers' tasks is to keep them trimmed and pinched, Vozella explained. We really don't want them to bloom in here. We want them to root. We want them to save all that up, she said. I want the blooms to go through October, through homecoming. One of the student workers, Sam Brown, a senior in horticulture from Rockford, said, I've been really spoiled because I love my job so much. She already has a job lined up after graduation in May and said the experience she had in the greenhouse gave her an advantage over other students. Junior Brandon Clem, an agronomy major from Lincoln, also likes the variety of work in the greenhouse and looks forward to coming back in the fall after the plants have established themselves around campus. I like when you go out on site and actually get to see the end goal, Clem said. Vozella agreed, saying there's no better feeling than to see the results of the work you've done. These plants also don't mind the extended winter that brought snow to Bloomington Normal in April. They are all snuggled in, she said. Even the plants already planted outside are holding their own. We pay attention to the weather and the season, selecting hardy plants that can stand the fluctuations of a fickle spring, said Vozella. This isn't my first rodeo. Spring plants are selected that can handle temperatures down to 35 degrees, she said. There are three big beds on the quad, and plants are arranged according to a few rotating patterns that are mostly geometric. The designs remain relatively unchanged, but the plants are different from year to year, she said. They include varieties of colorful coleus plants as well as lantanas, begonias, marigolds, cannas, geraniums, and vincas. They are standard and super reliable, said Vozella. We try to stick with plants that tolerate a little more neglect. In addition to plantings on the quad and smaller beds around campus, Vozella and her team are responsible for the garden at Ewing Manor, where she first started working for ISU part-time, and providing plants and flowers for various meetings and functions around campus. Whatever they need that's green-related falls under us, she said. Once commencement is over, it's all hands on deck to get the summer plants in place, said Vozella. But she claims few people notice them as they work, or like grounds ninjas. Vozella, who has been at ISU for 8 years, said she enjoys teaming with the student workers. They keep me young, she said. Drivers wary as gas prices creep up. Like many central Illinois drivers, Misty Noker of Bloomington has noticed the slow increase in gas prices over the past few weeks. I try not to think about the price much because you need gas to live your life, she said Monday, while filling her tank at Thornton's, 908 North Main Street in Bloomington. But I enjoy life better when gasoline is around $2 per gallon instead of $3 per gallon. And you hear stories about the state wanting to raise gasoline taxes, she added. I would think long and hard about before doing that if I were in charge. Average retail gasoline prices in Illinois have risen 2.5 cents per gallon in the past week to $2.75 per gallon, according to the gasoline price website, GasBuddy.com. The average price in Illinois is 13.7 cents higher than a month ago and 23.5 cents higher than the same time a year ago. The average price in Bloomington Normal on Monday was $2.60 per gallon for regular unleaded gasoline, according to GasBuddy. That is 2 cents higher than Sunday, 10 cents higher than a month ago, and 25 cents higher than last year on the same date. Indicator, the average price was $2.74 per gallon, 3 cents higher than Sunday, 32 cents higher than last month, and 55 cents higher than a year ago. The highest recorded average indicator was $4.19 in June 2013. The lowest recorded average since 2008 was $1.32 in February of 2016. Illinois motorists are not the only ones paying more at the pump. In fact, all but one of the nation's 50 states saw an increase in gas prices last week, said Patrick DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis for GasBuddy. Government data showed a new record for gasoline demand was breached last week, and we're not even into the summer driving season yet, he said. Gas prices are at their highest point in nearly 3 years, according to AAA. Expensive crude oil prices, unrest in the Middle East, strong domestic demand, record production rates, and global oil supply surplus have created the perfect storm to drive spring gas prices to new heights, said Jeanette Castellano, AAA spokeswoman. Consumers can expect gas prices to increase another 5 to 10 cents this season. The highest recorded average in the Twin Cities was in July 2008, when gas was $4.19 per gallon. The lowest recorded average since 2008 was $1.39 in February of 2016. Rebecca Moore of Clinton said the gas prices have caused her family to make some decisions. I drive 600 plus miles a week and it hurts, she said. I get reimbursed for mileage at 40 cents per mile, but we still had to trade vehicles for better gas mileage. Bill Newman of Normal, who was getting gas at Huck's, 102 West Oakland Avenue, Bloomington, said he is tired of the up-and-down prices. Those rich guys don't like it when gas hangs around $2 per gallon, so they manipulate it so we have to pay more, he said. When in doubt, blame it on the rich. DeHaan says that he wouldn't be surprised to see an uneven market in the coming weeks. With President Trump's tweet last week targeting the price of oil, there may be additional scrutiny on oil prices in the coming weeks that bears monitoring, he said. OPEC has been remarkably successful in better aligning supply to demand, draining the crude oil glut, and pushing the oil prices to their highest since 2014. While refinery maintenance and the change to summer gasoline are largely complete, oil prices remain one of the largest active drivers of gas prices now and likely in the weeks ahead, said DeHaan, adding, all signs point to some additional upward movement before the prices peak and perhaps drop slightly around Memorial Day into the month of June. Father's return of AR-15 at issue. Son jailed in Tennessee, shooting lost guns over fitness concern. Pekin. Beyond the potential legal consequences facing a former Morton man charged in the weekend shooting at a Tennessee restaurant is the question of whether his father may be liable for returning to his son the AR-15 allegedly used to kill four people. A manhunt ended Monday with the arrest of Travis Ryan King, 29, who was accused in the shooting that left two others injured Sunday at a Waffle House near Nashville. Tazewell County Sheriff Bob Houston said that his deputies took four weapons and ammunition from Travis Ryan King in 2017 after the Illinois State Police revoked Ryan King's Firearms Owner's Identification (FOID) card. The revocation followed Travis Ryan King's July 2017 arrest in a restricted area near the White House. The guns were turned over to Ryan King's father, Jeffrey Ryan King, who agreed to keep them from his son, who has a history of mental health issues, said the sheriff. Attempts to speak Monday to the elder Ryan King by a reporter for the Peoria Journal-Star were unsuccessful. Transfers of weapons from one family member to another as a bona fide gift are exempt from a requirement under Illinois law that the owner first verify with state police that the recipient of the gun has a valid FOID card. More information is required before a decision on whether to charge Jeffrey Ryan King is made, Tazewell County State's Attorney Stuart Umholz said Monday in an email to the Pantograph. At this point, our office does not possess enough information to determine if Jeffrey Ryan King committed a criminal offense. When our office receives information from the criminal investigation, particularly from the FBI, we will be in a position to determine if any violation occurred, Umholz said. The law prohibits the illegal sale or transfer of guns, said McLean County State's Attorney Jason Chambers, speaking generally about the provisions of Illinois' gun laws. Several questions must be considered when reviewing potential charges in cases involving weapons transfer, said Chambers, including how the gun was handed over and what knowledge the owner may have had about the recipient before the transfer took place. A prosecutor would have to look at the totality of the circumstances before filing felony charges, said Chambers. In 2012, Chambers filed felony charges against the father of a 14-year-old boy for allowing his son to illegally possess a handgun. He also was accused of allowing his son access to a rifle without having a FOID card. Father pleaded guilty and served 2 years on probation on the felony charge. The boy, a freshman at Normal Community High School at the time, fired four shots from the handgun into the ceiling of a classroom before a teacher managed to subdue him. The boy was found guilty but mentally ill and sent to a juvenile facility where he received mental health treatment before he was released. Normal Police Chief Rick Bleichner said gun owners who take possession of guns in situations similar to what is alleged in the Tazewell County case have a responsibility to safeguard the weapons. Once you accept the responsibility, it's on your shoulders, said Bleichner. The possible consequences for Jeffrey Ryan King for returning the gun to his son may not be limited to criminal charges. A civil case could be filed by victims and their families. Cases where a person's actions may be linked to criminal conduct by others are akin to loaning someone your car when you know they don't have a driver's license, said Bloomington civil lawyer Terry Dodds. Most negligence cases where a person is accused of providing someone with a dangerous instrument, in many cases a vehicle, seek punitive damages against the individual who hands over the keys to the reckless driver. According to Gun Violence Archive, the U.S. has experienced 67 mass shootings so far in 2018, defined by organizations as incidents in which four or more people are killed and injured. Daily Digest. Bloomington again a tree city. The city of Bloomington has been recognized as a Tree City USA community by the nonprofit Arbor Day Foundation for the 31st year. In addition, the city also received the Tree City USA Growth Award, recognizing higher levels of tree care by participating Tree City USA communities. To be recognized as a Tree City, a community must have a forestry department, tree care ordinance, community forestry plan with a $2 per capita budget allocation, and an Arbor Day observance and proclamation. Bloomington's Arbor Day observance is set for 1 p.m. Friday at Fox Creek Elementary School. Today in history. Today's highlight: on April 24, 1800, Congress approved a bill establishing the Library of Congress. On this date in 1792, Captain Claude Joseph Rouget de Lisle began composing War Song for the Rhine Army, later known as La Marseillaise, the national anthem of France. In 1877, federal troops were ordered out of New Orleans, ending the North's post-Civil War rule in the South. In 1915, in what's considered the start of the Armenian Genocide, the Ottoman Empire began rounding up Armenian political and cultural leaders in Constantinople. In 1947, novelist Willa Cather died in New York at age 73. Thought for today: never practice what you preach. If you're going to practice it, why preach it? This was written by Lincoln Steffens, American journalist, reformer, 1866 to 1936. Today's flick fact. Question: along Illinois 9, east of Bloomington near Saybrook, is a communications tower on one side of the road and a microwave tower on the other. That's not just coincidence. Do you know why? The answer is, at that point you are 955.7 feet above sea level, one of the highest points in all the Midwest, and a great place to plant your communications tower. For the next article, mobile homes burn in Atlanta. There's a large photograph of people walking across a cornfield away from the background of smoke and firefighters and apparently homes on fire. They're coming across a cornfield, and it says, no fire injuries, but dog killed, cause under investigation. No one was injured in a fire that destroyed two mobile homes Monday in Atlanta. The blaze broke out at 11 a.m. at the Sherman Trailer Court on the northwest side of town. Firefighters arriving on the scene were met with dense smoke and flames as the fire spread through both mobile homes that were about 40 feet apart. Residents of mobile homes around the blaze were evacuated after at least one explosion was heard in an area between both homes. A Logan County Sheriff's deputy said, an explosion was heard at the residence where the fire started. The blaze then spread to the second unit owned by Tim Langley. There were no injuries, but a dog was killed in the fire. One woman was transported to an area hospital to be evaluated, added Atlanta Fire Chief Rick Cheek. She had some cardiac issues prior, and so they weren't related to the fire itself, he said. The main thing is that everyone got out without getting burned. We had a lot of firefighters out there as well, and the most important thing is that nobody was injured. Steve Schaub, the owner of the residence where the fire started, lost a truck in the blaze. Schaub and three other family members lived there, said Dan Fulcher, director of the Logan County Emergency Management Agency. There are about 20 homes in the trailer court. It is unusual to come up to a fire and have two mobile homes on fire like that, Cheek said. Fire departments from Atlanta, Beeson, Armington, Waynesville, Lincoln Rural, Hayworth, Randolph Township, and Hartsburg responded to the blaze. Firefighters were using water that was being hauled from tankers. The cause remains under investigation by the State Fire Marshal's Office. Big Central Park eyed. 15-year master plan for parks programs presented to council. Creating a large, centrally located park and providing more variety by adding new elements to existing parks and recreation facilities were among the overall recommendations proposed in a City Parks and Recreation Comprehensive Master Plan. Bloomington Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Arts Director Jay Tetzloff and Dylan Packbush of Greenplay LLC, a consulting firm, the city paid $115,000 to help develop the plan, presented the draft recommendations to the City Council at a work session Monday. The city staff will finalize the plan, which will replace one created in 1997, and bring it back to the Council for a vote at a future date. The master plan, while non-binding, will guide the city's planning for the next 15 years. Among the new trends is creating a large park in a central location for community events such as movies in the park and festivals, a role historically played by Miller Park. Ward 9 Alderman Kim Bray wanted to know more about a recommendation related to combining the three Ewing Park areas off of Towanda and Jersey Avenues into one large Ewing Park to make that Central Park. The idea of a Central Park is a growing trend in recreation. People a little bit want to get out of their neighborhood and get into their community, which wasn't the case probably 15 to 20 years ago, said Packbush. Back then, the trend was to build neighborhood parks so people could stay within a mile of their park. There is now a generation that wants a bigger experience. You see the growth in things like festivals or these things like big community events that happen at centralized locations, said Packbush. We just think that it's a good opportunity based on the mass of people who live in the Ewing Park area. If people in the community from outside of a walkable access want to drive in, it gives enough space for assembling and parking for a large community event if you combine those three Ewing parks. The comprehensive plan will focus on parks and programs, but it will include feasibility studies related to O'Neill Park and its pool and a new recreation center to replace the Lincoln Leisure Center, a former 1930s-era elementary school at 1206 South Lee Street. The proposed plan stresses continuing to develop partnering opportunities with the town of Normal, local school districts, the McLean County Parks and Recreation Department, and local developers to potentially share and develop recreational facilities. I consider parks and recreation to be as high of a priority as public safety, because parks and recreation is public safety, said Ward 7 Alderman Scott Black. We have talked about the numbers over the years of keeping kids off the street and putting them in recreational programs and facilities that keep them from being incarcerated and causing trouble. There were few details shared Monday about the O'Neill Park pool or the Lincoln Leisure Center, but the information will be included in the final version of the park's master plan. The 44-year-old aluminum pool, which serves the west side at 1515 West Chestnut Street, is well beyond its 25-year lifespan, and the city staff proposed replacing it with a new aquatic center. A new recreation center might not be needed if a new multi-sports complex is developed with Normal, said Tetzloff. Black and Mayor Terry Renner stressed the need for equality and quality of services at all city parks, regardless of where they are located. You can walk around Sunnyside, Friendship, and Evergreen, parks which are in the city's predominantly low-income west side, and McGraw, which is in the more affluent east side. There is a noted difference, said Black, and that's functionally unfair. Funding effort up at Normal Library. As the state of Illinois and town of Normal struggle with budget issues, Normal Public Library's fundraising arm is ramping up, including two first-of-their-kind events in the next 2 weeks. There's a lot of good charitable giving going on in Bloomington Normal, but I don't know if people have considered the library, said Mark Tucci, president of the Normal Public Library Foundation Board. It's more an awareness-type start. We really haven't made an ask. The foundation started in 2011 to raise awareness and money for library needs and programs, including an upcoming building expansion or replacement, but is now aiming higher than ever before, said Tucci. The foundation still is raising money for the building and a tangible project via Giving Tuesday efforts, like 2015's Teen Mobile Makerspace, which raised about $6,300, but also looking to establish a $500,000 permanent endowment and an annual fund drive with local businesses. We are trying to be cautious in the way we approach this because we know there are other organizations out there fundraising, said Tucci, noting the Bloomington Normal YMCA and United Way of McLean County are among them. This event, May 6th, is kind of a beginning. It's our first effort into what's out there, who's out there. That event is Books on Tap at Distill Brewery at 1200 Greenbrier Drive. Tickets are $30, available at the library, 206 West College Avenue, or nplf-tap.eventbrite.com. The event includes library-themed beer and food pairing stations, raffles, brewery tours, and the chance to help staff design a beer. We are still in a fairly early stage of letting the community know the foundation exists, so this is a good opportunity to have a unique event and for the community to meet and interact with the foundation board, said Library Director Brian Chase, who helped start the foundation. I think they can help the library go from good to great. Meeting its goals would help the foundation sponsor library programming like An Evening of Time Travel and Mystery featuring Margaret Peterson Heddix, a library event Saturday that also benefits the foundation. Tickets are $15 at the library or normalpl.org/evening-time-travel-mystery. Children's librarian Lindsay Carney said, response to the event at Hancock Stadium Club has been so good that the library may plan more events like it. Of 200 available tickets, only 60 remained as of Monday. We have had author events before, but with this author, a lot of her work incorporates science fiction and time travel adventures, and I really want to bring that adventure to life, said Carney. It's a wonderful event for kids to attend with parents, and they will be able to interact and enjoy it together. Illinois' late payment fees skyrocket over 3 years. Illinois has racked up more in late payment fees in less than 3 years than it did in the 18 years combined, according to a report the Associated Press obtained Monday, and some major creditors say they have waited more than a year to receive the interest that they're owed. The report by State Comptroller Susana Mendoza found that the $16 billion in past due debt that piled up during a two-year budget stalemate comes with a steep price. Since July 2015, Mendoza reported, prompt payment penalties have totaled $1.14 billion, $100 million more than the total from 1998 up to then. Mendoza, a Democrat, was scheduled to release the report today, the first accounting of past due bills and accrued interest, since she was successful in getting a law requiring state agencies to report their incurred bills monthly. Earlier Monday, private companies, which have kept government vendors afloat by paying their bills and relying on state reimbursement with interest, told lawmakers that they have waited months for late penalty payments, threatening the program. Representatives of the four so-called qualified purchasers told the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability that banks and other lenders could dry up without timely late fee payments. Additional borrowing at a lower interest rate through a $6.5 billion bond issue last fall cut the backlog in half, but Dunn said vendors statewide are still experiencing payment delays. Mendoza is prioritizing education and assistance to the most vulnerable residents, Dunn said. We have now come to the end of the first half hour of the pantograph. We'll take a short break. Please stay tuned.